Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
Okay, so let's get at it. I hope that you are all doing well. It's been a week, right? If you have just come back from the Lake of the Woods cabin for about 5 months and you've been out of touch with reality, there was a presidential election. And in any like election cycle, there's going to be a lot of feelings. And maybe you're here, and or you're watching, or you're listening, and you have feelings of, I'll just share. Last night, we had some friends over, and we were processing, and they were sharing about what they were feeling, but they were sharing more about what their kids were feeling. And in their family, they have some unique circumstances of where it elicited a lot of hope for what candidate they were hoping for, what could bring, and another candidate that elicited a lot of fear for a whole lot of reasons. We're going to get into that in a little bit later. But regardless, what they were feeling was grief, loss, and what are our options? It's not even what do we do, right? They were already beyond what do we do and what are our options in thinking we could move out of the country, we can do this. And for some of you, that conversation might feel like, whoa, pump the brakes a little bit. For other people, you might have been having this conversation several months ago of what are we going to do. And for a lot of people that I've talked to, it wasn't as much directly tied to themselves as much as it was to people they love. And also a whole demographic of people that they've never met, right? And what they were voting for wasn't necessarily things that were going to directly benefit them, might even cost them. But it was the other. It was their daughter. It was their niece who went to college down in Alabama. It was their great-grandkids. Whatever it might be, it was people who moved here and found a home here, right? There's all these different circumstances that made it hard. Then on top of that, you just are living life, and that can be hard. We're in a season with the time change, which you might poo-poo, or like, who cares about time change? But for some people, it really does impact them. I'm one of those people. When the seasons change, and all of a sudden we change the time, and then it's getting dark like at 2 p.m., and we kind of laugh about it, but it impacts me. And it's not always bad. Like, in a season of where things are dying, in a season that things are going to sleep, as in a season where things are transitioning into a place of rest and recuperation and death, so that on the back end there can be new life. And there's something wise in that for us of being able to slow down, take things in, and prepare for whatever is next to come. But it's still hard. And maybe you've been off social media, maybe you've tried doing self-care, and you still find yourself, what are we to do? I've also had a week, and for a whole lot of different reasons. And when I was preparing for this message, the first thing came out, and this is so great, because when you hear me read the story, you're like, what are we talking about today, Sadr? It was the first thing. And what I hope, right, first thing is, I'm never going to do a dissertation on this verse and how I'm talking about it today. I want the record to show, right? But I found it very inspiring. And I found it very timely, and I hope that is for you. Because the wisdom of Christ should transcend time. The wisdom of Christ should transform. The wisdom of Christ can bring us some sort of grounding when we feel you don't know which way is up. Right? And like me, this week, for a whole lot of different reasons, I had pockets where it just felt like, am I taking crazy pills? Do I sleep all day? I had a couple times where I'm like, what would a responsible adult do right now, right? And you have to kind of go on the internet and think, oh yeah, go to work. That's a good thing. Yeah, go do my job. But it's funny, right? But when you're in those spaces, it's defeating, discouraging. And just to maybe you're here and you're having a hard time. Maybe you feel indifferent and you feel guilty that you don't feel worse. I've talked to someone about that. They're like, I feel like I should be having a stronger reaction than I am. Maybe you're here or you're watching and you're really excited about what's to come, right? There's room for all of that. And the real you is never a threat. But for those of us who are in a difficult place, what can we do? Here's the wisdom of Christ. We're reading out of Luke 16, verses 19 through 31. And I'm reading out of the translation called The Message. And as I read this, I'm not gonna make you stand. in the Gospels, in some churches, they stand. But as I read this, I hope that you can find some solace. I'm going to share a couple brief thoughts about this after, which probably means I'm going to talk for about 4 hours. But I hope that this Gospel reading can find some grounding and some belonging to you. There once was a rich man, expensively dressed in the latest fashions, wasting his days in conspicuous consumption. A poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, had been dumped on his doorstep. All he lived for was to get a meal from scraps off the rich man's table. His best friends were the dogs who came and licked his sores. Then he died, this poor man, and he was taken up by the angels to the lap of Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. In hell and in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham in the distance and Lazarus in his lap, and he called out, "Father Abraham, mercy, please have mercy. Send Lazarus to dip his finger in water to cool my tongue, for I'm in agony in this fire." But Abraham said, "Child, remember that in your lifetime you got the good things and Lazarus got the bad. It's not like that here. Here he is counseled and you're tormented. Besides, in all these matters, there is a huge chasm set between us that no one can go from, and us even to you, even if we wanted to." The rich man said, "Then let me ask you, Father, send them to my house of my father, where I have five brothers, so he can tell them the score and warn them, so they will not end up here in this place of torment." Abraham answered, "They have Moses and the prophets to tell them the score. Let them listen. Let them listen to them." "I know, Father Abraham," he said, "but they are not listening. If someone came back from the dead, they would change their ways." Abraham replied, "If they will not listen to Moses and the prophets, they're not going to be convinced by someone who rises from the dead." So clearly you can see how this translates to what we're feeling this week, right? This is the first thing I thought of. Because when Jesus is telling parables, Jesus telling stories, it's meant to be telling a story. In this time, it would have been understandable for people to visualize when Jesus is telling a story where it's being taken place. They might even have known Lazarus. They might have known this rich person that Jesus is talking about. It was meant for them to, like, insert. It'd be like if I told a story and I said, "Hey, at Canal Park in the Nautical Museum, the second place where you can use the telescopes to look at the ships," right? Or you're standing on the pier of the lighthouse. There's a lot of people you can, like, visualize yourself standing there, feeling the mist from the waves and hearing the seagulls, and blaming and secretly swearing at all the tourists for eating them bread, right? Because you're like, that creates more problems for me later on. And all those feelings, and you could visualize yourself there. And that's what Jesus is intending to do in these stories. He's telling a story to tell a much bigger, bigger story. And in this story, people are going to have their own takeaways. They're going to have their own interpretations. And that's the point. And it's also a... we use stories this day to inform people of what they should and they should not do, right? In the same way that we tell stories of, like, "Hey, do you remember when Grandpa Denny got thrown through the mirror at Burger King when he was in high school," right? or my Uncle Pat. Was it Pat? Tim? Pat. It sounds better when it's Grandpa Denny. So we remember when Grandpa Denny got thrown through the Burger King window, right? Or we tell those kids as a funny story about telling Grandpa, but also, like, maybe what things you shouldn't do. Right? And you guys can ask Grandpa Denny what he did to deserve getting thrown through a Burger King window, right? You tell stories like, "Hey, do you remember when Uncle Dana put his finger in the light socket," right? And they're like, "Ha ha, don't do that." So stories are meant to inform and to shape you. Jesus also in this story uses extreme opposites, right? I think it's hilarious because Jesus goes, there's this rich person who goes out and spends, what's the word that they use? Conspicuous consumption. Right, I love that. Conspicuous consumption. Just going out there and whatever needs to consume, it's mine. And I'll experience it, I'll embody it, sure, right? And then the opposite, it's this poor person named Lazarus, whose best friends are dogs that just licked their sores, right? This is gold. Jesus is telling a wonderful story of saying, there's this person, you're like, oh, Lazarus. And there's this rich person, like, oh, do we hate him? It's almost like a melodrama, is that what you call it? Right? Where you have like the piece of cake on the railroad tracks and the damsel's like walking towards like, oh, and the bad guy's like, come get the cake, my lady, right? It's like there's good people and bad people, right? That sounded creepy, I know, but it's right. I think that's Jesus' point. He's trying to get to these polar opposites. Then he goes to the rich person, goes to the place you don't think that he's going to go, right? He goes to Hades, what they reinterpret as hell. And then Lazarus goes to the most prominent place of honor, which is on the lap of Abraham, right? This is like wildly separated. And just one quick thought. I'm not a big fan of laps, right? I don't need to sit on laps ever again. I don't. First thing I read, I'm like, that's great for Lazarus. Could we just stand next to Abraham, right? Could we just have a nice firm handshake? Hey, Abraham, nice to see you, right? But there's this place where he's communicating with the rich man, and the rich man's communing with Abraham. And in there, he's saying, please, 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 can you do something so no one makes the same mistakes? And what is the mistake that the rich man made? Was it that he went out and consumed all these things? We don't know. It seems like, right? It doesn't say. It says that in one world, you got everything that's good, and Lazarus got everything that's bad. And in the afterlife, and we can fill in the gaps of why he would go to Hades for whatever reason, but in the story, there's not this clear cut, oh, you go to hell if you do these things. Jesus is telling a bigger story about what they would understand about Hades to get people to understand a bigger story about this life and why it matters, right? So as he's going out, he's stepping over Lazarus, who's right in front of him. And all Lazarus wants is not to be believed. It's not to be celebrated. He does not want like a big like 16-year-old or 16th birthday party. He doesn't want a pension. It says he just wants some food. And the kind of food that he wants is anything. Right? That's all he wants. How does that translate for us today? When I was thinking about this week and really the last couple months, we put a lot of energy to organize. We put a lot of hope in a platform or policies, a candidate. We get really, and we should. This is not a bad thing. I was supposed to say that. This is not to shame you. This is what makes me feel good. When I hear different politicians get up and say, we're going to make a difference, we're going to make a change, we can, what did they say? We're going to turn the book. Where they're going to point to the past and saying, do we want more of this? No, we want more of this future. And what does that future look like? There is access to healthcare. There's believability. There is inclusion. There is pathway to citizenship. All these things that I am passionate about. Things I deeply, deeply care about. And I've given a lot of time and energy into those candidates, those policies, and those platforms. And it felt good, right? For a moment, it feels good, like we're believing in something that's going to make a real difference. We feel good that it's going to possibly impact the lives of people around us. And we should. That is what it means to be a good human, is to invest in transformation and change. And then when it doesn't work, that candidate, that policy, that platform doesn't live to the expectation that we want it to be for so many different reasons, it devastates us, right? And why? There's several reasons. A, we believe in it. B, we are told to believe in it. We can't turn that off, that there is propaganda. There is words, there is research that goes into these words, these sayings. Who's going to be, what people do we hire to say these words over what videos and what pictures? Because they're trying to elicit a response from us, right? They're trying to bring us with hope and they're trying to bring us fear. And this is all parties. And it does a number on us because we begin to believe. And when it doesn't work, then we are left devastated. And I'm just going to quickly just pause and go to the side on this conversation. And we are all devastated for different reasons. And I'm not going to get up here as a middle-aged, cisgendered, straight, white man and say, hey, don't worry about it. It's fine. 4 more years, 2 more years, we're going to organize, we're going to change. there's a lot of us, there's a lot of you who have legitimate, valid reasons to feel lost and to feel scared. And I just want to say that is welcomed here. And I'm not going to get up this message and say, hey, let's just try harder. Wake up and organize, and we're going to do it again. Maybe you should rest. Maybe you should go to Jay Cook and scream into the void, right? Maybe you should go hug that puppy. Whatever is life-giving to you, I just want to recognize those are valid, valid reasons being scared or hurt or wondering what's next. But here's the green flag. We're in a series of where do we invest our time and our energy. As we come back home, so to speak, and we went out to make a difference, we went out to make a change, we never still can forget what's right outside of our door. There's still a Lazarus. There's still a need. There's still an opportunity that's right outside our door. And we can never unsee that. Because I'm speaking for me now, and you can, maybe some of you might relate. There's a part of me, and I'm not the most proud of this, but there's a part of me that wants someone else to do the work. I want, like, something's happening in the school, we go to the teachers. You need to fix this. Go to the principal. You need to fix this. We go to the school board, and these are all things we should do. Can you please change this? We might go to the police. We might go to court. We might elect a candidate for representing us in the local house. Might be Congress. Might be president. Might be Supreme Court. And we all want the UN, right? We want someone or something else. Can you just recognize and validate that there's this problem? And then can you do the work to make those changes? And we need that. But it's a both and. Sometimes we can use the hope and change of something else, somewhere else, someone else, so that we feel like we don't have to be engaged as much. And the reality is, as devastating as it is, there is still needs of the people across your street, in your home, in your body. And it's easy to forget those. It's not like a lot of people just like they recognize that there's a Lazarus or there is an opportunity, there's a need, there is desperation, there's, you know, hungry people, and we blow right through and saying, oh, we don't need you. It's that we're out looking for something bigger. We're out trying to do something what we believe is going to make the most impact, which isn't, again, not bad, but never at the expense of what's right in front of us. So for me, one green flag, before we get to the second one, is what are the needs that are right in front of us? And it might be metaphorically, right? It might be your mental health. This might remind you, as you've been stepping over your mental health to go advocate, to go organize, to get on TikTok or social media and make comments and push back and help change people's minds, which Facebook is the best way to change people's minds, right? Right? But maybe you're doing that and you realize that you're taking a cost of your own mental health and now you're fried. The amount of people I've talked to that said, I had to delete TikTok or I had to delete Facebook, I had to get off social media on their phone, is very high because that is wise, right? Maybe the Lazarus is someone in your own home. And maybe they're a mess. And maybe it's tied to the election, or maybe it's just tied to where they're at in their season of life. Maybe that Lazarus is like your kid's friend who's not doing so great. Maybe it's someone across the road who lost a loved one. Maybe it's someone whose dog died a year ago and they still haven't got over it. These are ways that we can continue to make an impact, to make a difference. Is it going to have like national headlines? Is it going to, as we fear and concern for those demographics people we talked about, is it mean it's going to rescue or create a platform for like everyone? No, but it might be for that one person. It might be for that one family has talked to you about their kid who hasn't really come out of the closet yet for so many reasons. Yeah, I've talked to these people. I wasn't planning on saying this. They're out of their mind scared. And I can't do anything about it, right? There's something inside of us that feels like, no, we have to go rescue or save or protect vulnerable people, and it felt like we were. And now what do we do, right? I know I'm not the only one who feels this way. Like I swing from like this anger of like, now what? And I have to go back to Lazarus and say, yes, because there's real people and kids and students and adults who need to be believed. You want to rescue someone? Believe them. It's the only way you can start. You got to believe them. So we still have to organize. We still have to go to the big things. But you know, a tip that we processed last night is a great way to move through some of this might be getting involved in local elections versus just national. It might be running for your city board. It might be running for everyone's favorite school board, right? It might be you volunteering like for a local office. It might be organizing a food drive. It might be getting a coat drive. There's things that we can do that can make a difference right now as we wait for more elections, right? So the first green flag is we have to know what are the needs. And if you don't know what the needs are, man, I would love to help you get connected to other people. I had the honor of going to, Diana Oesterreich puts on this, she wrote a book in this nonprofit called Waging Peace, and she put on the Local Peace Awards. It was just local, and people could nominate anyone who was like waging peace in their neighborhoods. And the neighborhood was a part of it, and I helped with it. And it was great, because anyone who nominated, there was 80 people got nominated, but like the finalists were like top 8 or top 6. And the person who nominated got to get up and give a reason or a presentation of why they nominated this person. Was anyone else there watching it? Oh, it was so rich. Because you know who it was? Ugh, I'm going to start crying again. It was football coaches. One of them was just someone who helped in the weight room and noticed these young men who just needed someone to listen to them and help them like figure what to do with their body. The woman who won, I had her name, and I just, it's not Henrietta, it's Helen, Miss Helen. I don't even know her last name. And she has volunteered at the Family Freedom Center. She's volunteered in all these nonprofits. And what she did, one of the big things she did is she advocated replace lead pipes in people's homes of young kids so that they could have less risk of any ill adverse health effects from lead being in the water. I didn't know that was still a thing in Duluth. I'm ignorant, apparently. And she, over the next 10 years, raised funding and got the city involved to start making that difference. That's going to change tons of people's lives that none of us know who advocated for that. Right? That's a way, as I imagine, I have not talked, I imagine she has some feelings about whatever's happening elsewhere, but her intention was the Lazarus right outside. Who can I help? Look for places of where you can help. That's number one. Number two, and this is where I end before I'm going to be reading a prayer, is Jesus in the story ends with the rich man saying, all right, since he can't come over here and give me water, at least like resurrect Abraham or send someone else to go tell my dad and my 5 brothers that they're missing the plot. And how does Abraham respond? By saying, hey, a dead person rising's not going to change anyone's mind because we already have Moses and the prophets. I might argue differently. Right? If someone, Grandpa Tony, raised from dead, said, hey, Chris, stop stepping over Lazarus, right? Like, thanks, Grandpa Tony, you got it now, right? But that's not the point. Because what Jesus is pointing to is the sacred ancient wisdom. Right before, in verse 19, what Jesus talks through is all about where do you find the most life? What's really going to deliver? And in Chris Sauter version of what he's saying, Jesus says right before this, like, the light and the stars will fade, but the power and the wisdom of the law never will. And then Jesus goes in to this story, right? So what is so powerful about Moses? And what's so powerful about the prophets that Jesus is making a point saying even dead people, and Jesus is a foreshadowing to resurrection, right? That's the big takeaway. Chris's takeaway in this, right, is that Jesus pointed to ancient wisdom. And ancient wisdom just doesn't come down by memorizing it. Jesus is not saying, oh, rich person, if you just would have memorized all the sayings of Moses, if you just would have memorized all the stories that Moses shared, If you would have just memorized the book of Job, a minor prophet, if you could have just gotten Isaiah, a major prophet, right? And you just memorize those, then you'd be good. Because sacred wisdom is not some static thing. It is dynamic, it's transformational, and it's fluid. And sacred wisdom always has been. Jesus is saying there is wisdom that's all around us. And if you choose to ignore wisdom, then nothing else is going to help you, right? Because what is, let's just take the prophets. What is the wisdom of the prophets? When you hear biblical prophecy, what's the first thing you think of? Anyone want to take a stab? When you hear biblical prophecy, what do you think of? Revelations, right? And if you ever read Revelations, I read Revelations when I was a kid at church because I was bored. And I'm like, there is a seven-headed beast coming out of the water, right? And when you're like eight, you're like looking behind you. Is that coming after me, right? So Revelation can bring biblical prophecy. Maybe, like for me, biblical prophecy is like it sells magazines in the grocery store, right? You seen those? Like in 30 years, Revelations comes true, Blood Moon, right? It does great for like movies, right? Biblical prophecy. Do you guys know what biblical prophecy was never intended to be? To be some future casting thing. Biblical prophecy was not like Isaiah saying, let me tell you about something that's going to happen 2,000 years from now. What prophets did, they had this premonition, they had this inspiration, they had this calling from God. And what they did is they'd go up the culture and they'd hold up a mirror. And they'd say, you think you look like this. Funny, you painted this picture of yourself, this beautiful portrait. And if you think that's what you look like, they'd hold up the mirror saying, take an honest look at who you are. And if you don't change, you're never going to look like that. If you don't pivot, what you're going to have is death and destruction. This is what the prophets did again and again and again. And can you understand why they would get murdered? Right? Can you understand why they got run out of town? Does anyone like it when someone holds up a literal mirror to them saying, do you know what you look like? Like, get out of here, right? What prophecy meant to do is take assessment of where you're at. Is this the kind of human you've always wanted to be? Is this the kind of people you've always wanted to be? And there had to be repentance. There had to be change. There had to be pivot. And this is what I love about the Bible. This is a quick Bible nerd thing. I still remember when we planted the church and I had this dad come up to me and he's like, hey, Chris, can I get, it was after church, he's like, can I get like just a couple seconds of your time? He had twin boys. My teenage boys started reading the Bible and it wasn't out of excitement. It was like, Chris, they're reading the Bible. He's like, Chris, they started reading the Bible and we got some problems. I'm like, okay, bring it at me. I love problems in the Bible. He's like, they want to know, why does it have God's name saying to the Israelites, go into Canaan and murder all the people? It's genocide. It's in the Bible. They don't hide it. They don't give cute words to it, right? It's what it says. And they're like, they don't understand why there's a story about God murdering entire groups of people. And I'm like, isn't that wonderful about the Bible? Because if you take the Bible, literally true, and saying, God did this, and you're like, oh, I guess God's ways are higher than my ways. They left the problematic stories in the Bible all throughout so that people would learn. So that people would not repeat those stories. Wisdom can be saying, look what happened to Grandpa Denny going through the Burger King window. Look what happened to Uncle Dano by putting his finger in there. You tell those stories to tell better stories so you don't repeat them. Wisdom gets us to learn. Wisdom gets us to wake. But here's the thing. Yes, it's in the Bible. But Tom, wisdom is everywhere. In Proverbs, it says, in chapter 1, it talks about how wisdom is like this woman on top of the city wall as people are coming in and out, and she's mocking people. Saying, you really want life? You really want to know what it's like? Come to me. And as everyone's blowing through by the door saying, no, I know where wisdom is. In chapter 8 in Proverbs, it says that wisdom is baked into all creation. It's all around us. So yes, does the Bible give us wisdom? Oh my gosh, so much. It is a sacred, ancient wisdom. But you know where else we get wisdom? Bono, right? It is. Still haven't found what I'm looking for? You know where we get wisdom from? Lisa Sharon Harper. The Very Good Gospel. If you've never read it, it's one of my favorites. It's so good. Do you know where we get wisdom from? Oh, I should have wrote her name down. She's a womanist theologian. She goes, if God still breathes, why can't I? You want to read a book about transformational change? Wisdom, James Cone, Jesus and the Lynching Tree. Wisdom from the story about your great-grandma that she told you. Wisdom you find in art. Wisdom you find in the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. Wisdom comes through your favorite song. Wisdom comes from your kids coming home and telling you their favorite story. Wisdom comes from your pet saying maybe, they can't tell you, but you know how sometimes your pet just knows something, knows you're not well and comes up next to you? Wisdom is all around us if we're awake to hear it. And that's the green flag. You might be hurting, you might be exhausted, you might be tired, you might want to give up. There's wisdom. This week, there's several things that I wanted to say. There's several things I wanted to do. Some things I felt compelled. Some things I felt like it's demanding that I do this. And I had my partner and I had other wise people just say, Chris, maybe we should just rest for a little bit. Right? Totally counteractive what I feel. It was the wisest thing someone could have told me. This is what I love about church. Right? Like, are we this massive city on a hill? No, right? We're not like the largest church in America, and that's, I wouldn't want that. B, right? What I love about neighborhood is, yes, announcements, Nancy, are the best, right? What I love about neighborhood is the 5-minute break and after is when people start talking. I heard a story of Rebecca when she put on the event here. And she told me about a couple of people have never met, and they sat down and did like a puzzle together. And she goes, and they just started talking, and they learned each other's names. I'm like, that is the most sacred, holy thing that could happen. Why? Because we need wisdom. And wisdom might be, I'm not doing great over a cup of coffee, or as you both reach for the cherry donut, right? It might be, hey, say I saw online that you're doing this thing. Can you tell me more about it? It might be, do you have adult kids? Because I'm a mess with my kids. It might be, can you just give me a hug or handshake? Sometimes just us bumping into each other and looking each other in the eyes and reminding that you are okay. It might be reminding each other that you're beautiful and you're good and you got this and you should be a mess and you're in pain and there's still hope. And there's still life. And out of all the things that a church can be, to me, this should be one of the top. Can we share life? Can we interact? And can we inspire? And can we remind? Because we need that wisdom. So the green flags. What are the needs in our communities, in ourselves, that are right in front of us? And how do we access sacred wisdom that's in the Bible and that's all around us? And I'm going to read this prayer. And this prayer, I hopefully will land for you. It did for me. If you need some sacred wisdom, I'm going to be reading a prayer from St. Francis de Sales. And as I read it, if you need some encouragement, it's a very brief prayer. I encourage you to close your eyes if you find grounding in that. And closing your eyes when we're praying is not a magic trick to get God to notice us. It's a way of quieting our energy. It's a way of recognizing our spirit and taking a posture ready to receive something maybe holy. A prayer for serenity and acceptance. Do not look forward in fear to the changes of life. Rather, look to them with full hope as they arise. God, whose very own you are, will deliver you from out of them. For she has kept you thus far, and she will lead you safely through all things. And when you cannot stand it, she will bear you in her arms. Do not fear what may happen tomorrow, The same everlasting mother who cares for you today will take care of you then and every day. She will either shield you from suffering or she will give you unfailing strength to bear it. So God, we ask that those words be true. And that we can bury ourselves in your presence, in your arms. And I thank you that you are a good, good mother. And we recognize that a lot of us are hurting, a lot of us are grieving, a lot of us are scared, a lot of us are tired. And God, will you come and give us what we need to be able to sustain and not just survive. Maybe for some of us today it might be survival. But God, will you give us what we need to hear and see and embody and move with that sacred wisdom. And we can trust when it tells us to pause or tells us to rest or tells us to get up. It tells us to eat. It might tell us to put on some music. It might tell us to go connect with a friend. And Holy Spirit, I pray you continue to inspire us to be able to see the real needs in ourselves and the needs of the people in our path. And that we can be a community of life and transformation and hope in the midst of incredibly hard, unforeseen things that are coming. But I know, God, that you are good and that us as a church, us as humans, can embody and extend that goodness.